Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with tap to pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. So Money episode 732, Scott Wapner, host on CNBC and author of the new book, When the Wolves Bite.
You're listening to So Money with award-winning money guru Farnoosh Karabi. Each day, get a 30-minute dose of financial inspiration from the world's top business minds, authors, influencers, and from Farnoosh herself. Looking for ways to save on gas or double your double coupons? Sorry, you're in the wrong place. Seeking profound ways to live a richer, happier life? Welcome to So Money.
5 years ago, two billionaires named Bill Ackman and Carl Icahn duked it out on national TV. I'm talking big fight, big fight. And the clip went viral. They hurled accusations and insults at each other over differing opinions on a deal. And our guest today, Scott Wapner, was the CNBC host who was right in the middle of this live battle. Welcome back to So Money, everyone. I'm Farnoosh Tarabi. Scott Wapner is on the show today to discuss this TV battle that helped kind of make a name for himself as a serious and talented journalist. He didn't stop there. He recently published a book last month called When the Wolves Bite: Two Billionaires, One Company, and an Epic Wall Street Battle. I definitely see a film or a TV series in its future. The book gives the real story of this viral disagreement, including unparalleled access to both of these men and where they and the deal stand now. We'll talk about the book, but also Scott's career, how he got his start, because believe it or not, he didn't always want to be a financial journalist. And what makes him so money? Here's Scott Wapner. Scott Wapner, welcome to So Money. Congratulations on your new book.
Thank you so much. It's really a pleasure to be here.
Take me back to when the wolves first bit on your show. Your book is called When the Wolves Bite: Two Billionaires, One Company, and an Epic Wall Street Battle. And that battle was between Carl Icahn and Bill Ackman. And it was over Herbalife, which is a supplements company. And this all started on your show, The Halftime Report on CNBC, where the two just went head to head, a big brawl. Did you expect it?
I didn't. It's funny. I mean, you say when they first bit, I mean, they really bit. Because it was almost a surreal moment. I had booked Bill Ackman to come on and talk about Herbalife, which he had already gone public with and, you know, was short $1 billion. And there were rumblings in the market that Icahn was long the stock and was taking the other side of Ackman. And the day before all of this unfolded on live TV, Icahn was on a different network, and he was really laying into Ackman in a way that you just don't normally see. So, you know, I asked Bill if he wanted to come on and defend himself from that. And another producer here by the name of Max Myers, who already had a relationship with Icahn, had reached out to him and told him that he should watch the interview and that if he was interested, he should call in and try and have a conversation with him on the air. So, you know, one thing led to another. I was anchoring the show from the floor of the stock exchange, and we had this brawl for almost a half an hour, no commercial breaks or anything, where these guys were insulting each other. And it was truly surreal. You just don't normally see two billionaires insulting each other, especially, you know, their generational differences. You know, it was like old school versus new school, their different upbringings. It was, you know, Icahn went to Princeton, Ackman went to Harvard. So you had this Ivy League battle as well. And it was just one of those moments that we knew or certainly sensed that was going to live on. Now, I had no idea that the Herbalife saga itself would live on for as long as it did over the course of 5 years. But because it did, and I ended up being in the middle of it from really that very first moment and covering it, you know, every step of the way thereafter, it just became a natural thing when it was all said and done that I wanted to write a book. And if I was ever going to write a book, that this would be the story that I would really want to recount and dive into in a way that I couldn't as just a, you know, a reporter or an anchor covering the story. I really needed to dive in deeper to find out what was going on behind the scenes. So I decided to write the book, and here we are.
Right. Because the book is not just about, and this story is not just about money and business. It is about personalities, egos, history, the way you were raised. And so it kind of played out for me and watching the brawl live. I didn't watch it live. I watched it back on YouTube. Everybody should check it out. It, by the way, it's just their audio, but you can just imagine these two men in person brawling, though it played out like an episode or a scene in Billions. And probably inspired some of the episodes in Billions. This book funny. Could definitely really be a movie.
Yeah, it really was, you know, one of those things where you kind of remember where you were. and it was just so out of the ordinary that you'd have these guys, you know, yelling at each other. And it really, you know, what I try to do in the book is give you a sense, a true sense of who these people really are. And then you decide for yourself, you know, what makes each of the main characters in the book act the way they do, invest the way they do, make the money decisions that they do. And if you can read through the pages in the book and come away with a window into their psyche and psychology of investing, then, you know, I try to give you a deeper layer than just the background of this story itself. And I think readers will take a clear view of who these individuals are by virtue of the stories I tell.
Were you surprised by the ultimate fate of this story, that where you have now Herbalife, which is up 120% over the last 5 years, Icahn, the victor in this story? Are you surprised by the turnout, and who are you rooting for?
So I'm not surprised that it turned out the way it did. And look, frankly, I mean, I have no rooting interest in it at all. But I'm not surprised the way it turned out, because the minute that Icahn emerged in the story, the game changed in a real and dramatic way. And I'm not sure that Bill Ackman fully understood how much the game had changed and how much the goalposts had moved. You know, he went short the stock. He made a big public presentation and the stock got hammered in half. And I think he thought that, you know, he was going to win, that this was going to be over fairly quickly. And then Carl Icahn emerged and it was simply different after that. But I don't think that Ackman truly expected Icahn to remain as resilient and just be there as long as he really planned to be. And I don't think he was prepared to deal with the fact that Icahn would continue to build his stake bigger and thus apply more leverage and the potential of a short squeeze in the stock, which would, you know, mean that, you know, Icahn and others who were long would take so much stock out of the marketplace that if Bill Ackman ever had to cover or get out, it would be incredibly difficult and very expensive, and his losses could be infinite. And I just don't think that Ackman truly understood where the game was going from those initial days.
Hmm. Scott, you've always wanted to be a journalist, I read. Did you always think that you wanted to be in this in this beat, covering the markets and business? Did you gravitate towards this, or did you just sort of accidentally fall into this field?
You know, Farnoosh, if you told me, you know, that today, okay, you're going to, or if you told me, you know, say 20 years ago, you're going to be a business journalist and you're going to cover the markets and you're going to have all of these relationships with these billionaire investors, and that's going to be the focal point of your professional life, I would have told you you're crazy. Mm-hmm. I really, you know, grew up having an intense interest in media and journalism and news, but I always thought I was going to be, you know, a sports broadcaster. That's what I wanted to do when I was growing up. I was sort of obsessed with sports, and I thought I was going to be the next Bob Costas or Howard Cosell. At least I hoped to be. But, you know, one crazy little break, you know, to another, I ended up getting a job right out of school with a guy who ran a syndicated business show in the town where, you know, in D.C. I grew up out just outside of D.C. So I took that job, and it was kind of a do everything sort of a job. And it's just that, you know, you cover business news there. You know, one thing leads to another. I ended up getting a job in New York as a reporter for a business feed where I would do, you know, reports on, maybe it was a big economic report that came out that day or a big analyst call. And I would prepare a reporter package on that. And then I got a job offer in Dallas for a local affiliate down there as their franchise business reporter. And it was a really up and coming market for the type of, you know, business news that the station wanted to do. You know, people like Mark Cuban were, you know, emerging on the scene as real players. And there were so many corporate headquarters located there, EDS, Frito-Lay, Dr. Pepper, JCPenney. So many of these, you know, Fortune 500 names were down there that they wanted to add a business reporter. So I got that job. And, you know, here I am. I've been at CNBC in one capacity or another since 2001, first as a correspondent for the Wall Street Journal report. And I'd be honest with you, I would never look back or want to go back. I love this. I love the markets. I love business news. I love how relevant and important it is. And instead of wanting to, you know, be around the Tom Brady's and these other, you know, great professional athletes, I love being around the billionaires who move the markets and move money and really, you know, have weighting on the way that the world really truly operates.
And the business world definitely takes on its own form of athleticism.
It does, right? And covering the markets is like a sport.
It is. It is. I want to share a story with you. You have no idea that this ever happened, but I do, because so I used to report from the NASDAQ for thestreet.com years ago, and you were there, I believe, at some point, right? Didn't you report from the NASDAQ?
I did. Yes,
you did. And so you are like the North Star for all of us else, you know, other reporters working for these .coms and, you know, our little digital channels. And you like CNBC was like, you'd made it. So we were very much in awe of you. And I remember one day Microsoft came to ring the opening bell and Steve Ballmer was going to be there. And the press team said, absolutely no interviews with Steve. No way. You got in there and you got, I don't think he wanted you to interview him, but you got an exclusive with Steve Ballmer. Do you remember that?
I vaguely remember that. You know, it was, well, first of all, you're very nice just saying the things that you did. You know, covering the markets for me was critical, again, because I didn't grow up and I didn't have a you know, learned background at school or anything. I didn't have any practical experience, you know, on the street. So being at the NASDAQ in those days, and I was there, I think, for around 3 years, mm-hmm. which felt like an eternity, but it was necessary. It was like boot camp of really learning the markets and talking about these stocks all the time. And then, you know, being on the floor of the stock exchange, it literally was like going to graduate school for the stock market. And, you know, it was sort of just really running on your feet, whether it was Ballmer or I remember Oprah showed up there.
Wow.
One day to do an interview, actually to ring the opening bell. And I can't remember what it was for. And again, it was sort of no interviews, but I somehow ended up, you know, dragging her into an interview with me on stage, you know, that little stage that mm-hmm. they have there. And, you know, it was one of those moments where, you know, you were a hustler and you just tried to do whatever you could possibly do to, you know, make a mark and beyond the mundane of, okay, Microsoft is trading here, Apple's trading here, Intel's here, to try and take advantage of those fun little moments that you could, you know, at least make a name for yourself beyond just the simple stock coverage that, you know, we all did.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
You want to know what's worse than shopping for jeans? Shopping for bras. It's never been fun for me until Third Love came into my life. Third Love was launched to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. They make solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen probably since high school and have straps that actually stay put. Third Love's bras are designed at their headquarters in San Francisco, and they're made from premium materials. They put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before they're given the stamp of approval. And whether you're a AA or an H cup, their virtual fitting room can help find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups, so long feeling stuck between two cup sizes that just don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code podcast15. That's thirdlove.com to get $15 off your order with the code podcast15.
What's your opening line when you're approaching Oprah for an interview that she doesn't really want to do?
It may have been something like, hey, we're on live TV.
Look,
you got to give an opportunity.
Look like you're interested, right? You have no choice.
Yeah.
The cameras are rolling. That's
yeah,
funny.
So it was funny. I mean, I still have this photo that was blown up of me standing there interviewing Oprah. It's definitely one of the main memories I have from reporting from the stage. As I said, otherwise, it's just, you know, the memories are what we all did all day there. You get up there and you talk about the stocks that are moving, but one day doesn't truly resonate from the next, you know, unless you somehow have one of those moments. And to bring it full circle, it's what I got lucky, and I had it on the halftime report, and here I am, you know, 6 years later. And you have a book.
I'd love to dive into your personal finances a little bit. This show, So Money, is what people come for. They come here to learn about our guests' money mindsets and experiences. Going back to childhood, you mentioned you were raised outside of DC. What was your foray into the financial world as a kid? Did you have an education around this? What was your most memorable moment?
Around money?
Yes. Learning about money or, you know.
Geez, but maybe learning the hard way. And I remember getting my first credit card. Let's take it to that stage, because prior to that, you know, I have no real, you know, great recollection of lessons that I would have learned at an early age. Although, you know, my parents were clearly careful about the money they spent. And when you're young and a child, you know, you don't know from what you don't have. really you're happy with what you do. You don't think of things in that sense. But I do remember getting my first credit card, and maybe it was in college. And man, I wish I knew then what I know now about debt and all of that. Because I mean, I really enjoyed having that credit card. Let's just say that, until the bills start rolling in and you realize, okay, you have to pay the piper at some point. And it really was a somewhat life-changing, life-molding, event. And when it comes around money, because I never forget it, of having to, pay off those bills myself. My parents weren't going to come to the rescue, for me. And, I did whatever I had to do, working extra jobs and doing whatever to pay off, and we're not talking about astronomical debts, but enough that when you're, in college, you don't have, a few thousand dollars at your obvious disposal in your own bank account. So, it was a good lesson learned. And I truly do think about that today, which is why now I don't carry balances on credit cards, or certainly try not to, and I always think of those moments.
Our podcast sponsor Chase Slade did a survey recently and found that over half of parents have talked about money with kids. It sounds like maybe you didn't have that direct lesson, that teachable moment. Maybe you did. I'm wondering though, was there anything your parents taught you either through conversation or just modeling around money?
I'm sure they did. It's just nothing that I can say, oh, I remember this one story that my mom or dad told me, or, the ways that we talked about, money. I just don't really have that recollection that we had some big sit. Now we may have, and for all intents and purposes, we probably did. But it wasn't a revolutionary kind of conversation. I think what I learned about that was mostly through my own kind of trial and error. I mean, it was, it was always the importance of making your own money and working hard and stuff like that. I always had, from the first time that I was old enough to work, I always had jobs. And tried to, make and save money so that I wasn't, reliant on anything. If I wanted things that maybe my parents couldn't provide for, I wanted to make sure that I could do it myself. So I think those were valuable lessons. And I'm sure there were things that they, fulfilled for me in terms of those discussions about money. But the most valuable stuff truly is what I learned from my own errors,
Yeah, the school of hard knocks. You talked about trial and error, and it sounds like the error might have been, one of the errors was the credit card in college, been there. What was the win? What was your so money moment or moments? What's something that you're really proud that you accomplished in your financial life?
I'd say really being responsible about putting money away diligently for, kids' schooling. My wife, I have to give, all credit for the biggest financial win, so to speak, was really orchestrated by the brilliance of my wife, who ended up buying an apartment in Manhattan in an area downtown that wasn't very hot at the time. It was not, at all. And she really had the vision to do it. And she sold it, when we were together, she sold it at what would be the top of the market. So, that was a tremendously successful financial transaction, that, I only get any credit for because I happen to be there. But it was really her wisdom about that. Mine, I would just say just being diligent about saving money. And I just think it's because of some of the things like around, what the story I just told you before, really making sure that you're thinking about the future, that you don't need. I really try and live on the, I do try and live life well in the way that, you know, I'd like to, but not stupidly, or frivolously. And then I do think of, you know, do I really need that sort of thing? Oh, I want that. I want this. Do I really need that? And I hope that I make smart decisions today in ways that maybe I wouldn't have in the past.
I want to let you get back to your job, which is your halftime show, the halftime report. And you're on are you at the New York Stock Exchange now?
I'm not. We do our show probably 99% of the time from our studio in Englewood Cliffs, New Jersey. I go to the Stock Exchange every now and then when, you know, maybe we have a guest who wants to join from there, or we feel like it's a, you know, big day is upon us. So we'd like to be in the center of the action down on the exchange, but more times than not, I'm here at our studio.
All right. So two last questions. The first is, where are the markets headed? A lot of people who listen to this show, although we're smart enough to not make knee-jerk reactions, right, everybody, to market news. We're all about the long-term approach to investing. We're investing in our retirement portfolios, but we're curious. You know, we want to know as far as, maybe the second half of this year, and it's been reported widely that the markets they've peaked. Everything's really hot right now. We're overvalued. So I know we're going to be headed for a dip, but how big are we headed? How big is this dip?
I wish I knew. I mean, I'm cautiously optimistic still on the markets. I don't think the cycle's over. I really don't, you know, unless I'm missing something. I just think, you know, global growth is synchronized in a way that I just can't see it as having topped out. Our earnings are good. Have they peaked? I don't think so. I still think that the tax law and the benefits from that and buybacks, you know, companies buying back their own shares, which stimulate stock prices higher, I think we haven't even seen, you know, the full bore of that. I think as long as interest rates don't get out of hand, I'm optimistic. I mean, I'm cautious only because there are wild cards around the world that you don't know how they're going to ultimately play out. The trade and tariff narrative is, I think, a full negative for the market. Is it a big enough negative to cancel out the positives that I mentioned? You know, I don't necessarily think so. And I also don't think that it's going to reach the point where it becomes so punitive for the market that we have some sort of, you know, dramatic upset in stock prices. We had that big pullback in early February, and it was scary in volatility, you know, after having such sanguine markets and the most calm year on record last year in the market. A jolt back of volatility felt, you know, earth shaking, but I still think the table is set pretty well that this can be, you know, a decent 6.5 months left in the market. I'm not, you know, suggesting that we're going to go to the moon or that, you know, there won't be some sort of pullback again, but I really have a more optimistic view with a slight, you know, hint of caution, just because there are real issues on the table, you know, North Korea, China, trade, et cetera. But I think the scenario is still pretty good.
Well, I like that answer. That made me feel good. I don't know about you all listeners, but cautiously optimistic.
I think that's
fair.
Yeah, I don't see us having a giant pullback unless there's some, you know, existential thing out there that, you know, none of us know what it is. But, you know, it's not that long ago that the tax bill was even passed. I don't think that we've seen the full benefits from all of that. So I don't know. I'd like to think that the next 6 months can be pretty good. Maybe surprise some people.
Yeah. All right. Well, Scott, and last but not least, I'm Scott Wapner. I'm So Money because fill in the blank.
I'm So Money because I have the pulse. I have my finger on the pulse, I think, of what moves the markets every day and who's moving it.
And that's why you host the Halftime Report. Thank you so much, Scott. We will be sure to share your show and your book back at the website. But the book, again, for listeners who are listening now and want to buy it right away, it's When the Wolves Bite, Two Billionaires, One Company, and an Epic Wall Street Battle. Congratulations and good luck on the show.
Thank you so much. So much fun. I really, really enjoyed it.
Thank you for tuning in, everyone. That's Scott Wapner for you. He's on Twitter at Scott Wapner CNBC. His show is called Halftime Report, airs daily on CNBC. And the book, again, is called When the Wolves Bite, Two Billionaires, One Company, and an Epic Wall Street Battle. If you missed any of this, just head over to SoMoneyPodcast.com, click on Ask Farnoosh 2, and you can send me a question or leave a thought about the show. Love hearing from you. You can also join me on Instagram if you like, at Farnoosh Tarabi. Having loads of fun over there. Lots of storytelling. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. And I hope your day is so money. Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.